Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Put up it in! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
All right, everybody. The Celtics actually get a win. That's right, 103-94 final score. Definitely not representative of how close this game was. Brad Stevens, in an interview early in the fourth quarter, said it was a game of runs. It sure was. We're going to break it all down tonight on the CLNS postgame show. I'm going to have Calvin with me in just a second. But listen, all season long, CLNS Radio has been bringing you lots of opportunity, including tickets, and we have a ticket giveaway for you. I'm going to hit this right off with the live read, get the show started off right. Celtics fans, on February 10th, Paul Pierce will return to the TD Garden as a member of the Los Angeles Clippers to face the Boston Celtics. And CLNS Radio and Tick IQ have teamed up to get you in the building. Simply follow at CLNS Radio on Twitter. That's at CLNS Radio on Twitter, and you will be entered into a contest to win the pair of tickets. Contest is underway now, and again, by simply following at CLNS Radio on Twitter, the winner will be drawn at random on the January 31st edition of Celtics Speak. That's coming right up, just a few weeks away. And don't forget, you can purchase your tickets to all the local sports teams as well as concerts and shows by downloading the Tick IQ app for your iPhone and Android. And to receive 10% off your first purchase, use the promo code BOSTON. That's BOSTON when downloading the Tick IQ mobile app. Yeah, folks, I'll tell you what, looking at this game, setting it up, I'm thinking, all right, the Celtics have lost six of their last seven in four straight. Really rough. They gave it up to the Knicks last night, fell to 500 for the first time in a long time. And here we are. It's Powerball Lottery Mania night all over the country. Boston Celtics are on national TV, televised on ESPN. They're slipping, they're sliding, can't close out games, and we're sitting here wondering, I'm thinking lottery, but I'm not only thinking Brooklyn lottery, I'm thinking maybe the lottery is also going to be the Boston Celtics' own pick, and they're going to have two lottery picks, two chances to win coming up in the draft in June. But, you know, they're showing some spunk tonight, and we're going to break it all down, coming right up. I'm going to bring Calvin on, but I'll tell you what, this team absolutely showed some grit. Three straight steals in the final minutes of the fourth quarter. Really risky pressing defense on the perimeter and then attacking the paint. And that's the way you're supposed to finish games. I didn't know if they had it in them. They definitely had energy at the beginning of the game. They went down 8-0. Indiana just Pacers jump right out on top of them. But the Celtics fight back with a 9-0 run about a minute or two later and actually get a 13-12 lead midway through that first quarter after Thomas takes a three-pointer. So there was some grit. There was some fight. Early in the season, this team struggled in the first quarter. They corrected it. Then they struggled in the third quarter. And I'll tell you what, tonight it looked like they weren't going to struggle in that third quarter. It looks like they were going to go hold even though Paul George was going absolutely off after a very, very bad first half. Looked like the Celtics were going to at least hold even in the third quarter, but they really faded at the end of the third quarter. And Indiana started to get some and Indiana was flat tonight. Let's be real. They were absolutely flat tonight. But this team, this Indiana team started to get on a little bit of a run in the fourth quarter. Then they get a chance to take the lead, and the Celtics are kind of put back on their heels. So I'll tell you what, today's episode of the CLNS postgame show against the Celtics versus the Pacers is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you are driving, running errands, in the gym, or just simply at home relaxing. And for our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and browse the over 180,000 audio programs. download a title free and start listening. It's just that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider is Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future by Martin Ford. Get a 30-day trial, free trial, at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. That's audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. So here we go. We're going to be talking. And don't think for a second we're not going to open up the phone lines, because we are. We are absolutely going to open up the FanDuel phone lines. So everybody sit tight. We're going to be getting to that in just a little bit. Gotta go to my boy Calvin and bring him on. Calvin, are you with us?
I am indeed.
So what did you think of the game? It was kind of a push me, pull me, right? Love, you're thinking they're just going to fall back into their losing ways, unable to finish games like we've seen as of late, and then and they actually pull one out and show some grit.
Well, yeah, it looked like they were going to go in that direction. Recent games where they built up leads and, you know, had catastrophic finishes down the stretch. But they were saved by what's been saving them all season, and that is opportunistic defense. You know, Indiana had that lead with, what, a minute and a half left in the game, and the Celtics got three straight steals and turned that into a three-point lead of their own. And, you know, once that happened, they were able to retain possession, and Indiana had to start fouling. Isaiah Thomas took over down the stretch, but I think that, you know, Indiana got a little lazy with their passing. First one went through Mahimi's hands. That's going to happen one way or the other. But second two, it was just, you know, perfect timing by Crowder and then Smart. And then, you know, after those two, later Crowder again after Paul George stole that inbound pass late in the fourth quarter. Just really played those passing lanes well down the stretch, and that to me was essentially the difference in what was an either-or game until the final minute.
Yeah, and it really was an either-or game. But the runs were just absolutely insane. And the other thing that's interesting is, all right, so the Celtics get the loss last night against the Knicks, and we've seen them be very strong on the second game of back-to-backs, not the last time, but for most of the season and even towards the end of last season. But where they haven't played well is at home. So when you talk about, you know, this game being up for grabs, it was up for grabs before it even started, because we know on the one hand they're really strong on the second night of back-to-backs, but we also know they're not strong at home. And really, this was a well-deserved win or for the fans. I don't even necessarily mean for the team. I just mean for the fans that keep coming out and keep cheering. And they exploded a couple of times tonight. And obviously, after the three back-to-back steals, the crowd went crazy. But this was something the Celtics kind of owed the fan base, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And I think that at times they played a little lackadaisical at home. Tonight, I didn't think so. For the late run, they were playing hard. You know, they were playing tough defense. Indiana sort of, in my opinion, you know, had to hit a lot of difficult shots in that game. You saw what Jay Crowder did to Paul George in that first half, just was all over him, smothering him. Even when he sort of went off in that third quarter, you know, he hit that three from, you know, 3 feet behind the line. There's nothing you can do about that. And, you know, he got a couple of second chance opportunities to sort of send him off on his way. But you just look at down the line, there's so many guys who put in a ton of effort tonight. Amir Johnson was all over the place. You know, I failed to mention his poke steal, but he also had those 18 boards. You know, yeah, he isn't a good interior defender, but he's not always the biggest rebounder. He got eight offensive boards. It's a huge thing. I think part of it...
Four of them in
honestly,
the first quarter.
Yeah. I think a huge part of it, honestly, is the fact that they were playing Indiana, a team that plays a sort of smaller lineup, a team that wants to run. And I think that plays into what the Celtics want to do, which is, you know, create turnovers and get points out in the fast break. I think where they've struggled recently is just scoring in the half court, and that was not really a problem tonight, because Indiana was trying to push the pace as much as the Celtics were, and you really saw, you know, the Gazelles get out tonight.
Well, and you mentioned Johnson and his performance, and that was a season high for him, those 18 rebounds and four of those eight offensive boards coming in the first quarter. And then towards the end of the fourth quarter, some good, even though he didn't convert on one offensive rebound, he did convert on the first one that he got. But that was actually in the third quarter, right when I thought they were starting to slip away, and then they were able to hold on. Johnson had a back-to-back offensive rebounds. The second one was in a crowd, and he wasn't able to convert it, putting it back up. But Bradley got that steal and then scored on a breakaway, and the crowd went bananas. But I've said since the beginning of the season, if Johnson's involved, and he was involved in the offense tonight as well, but some of it he created on his own, which we haven't seen very often. But anytime Johnson's involved in the offense, I think that's a great symptom that the Celtics are playing right. But I am wondering if that's also the case with the rebounds, and I'm not so sure because the team went with that small lineup down the stretch, but Johnson still just outworked it. I know he's been plagued with that plantar fasciitis. I almost wonder if this is one of those games where he just felt awesome and he was able to play at peak level for him. I'd love to see him continue the rebounding.
Yeah, you know what, I think it's a lot of it has to do with how they play him as well. You know, I like Amir Johnson out on the court, particularly with the way he plays with Isaiah Thomas, but I think that they put him up for that high screen and roll so often, and he can crash the boards, but usually he's looking for that interior pass, and, you know, he might not necessarily get those offensive rebounds because he's the trail man a lot of the time in that situation. But, the eight offensive boards were impressive tonight. I think part of it also has to do with the fact that Amir Johnson is also often having to guard bigger guys as the functional center out there on the court, you know, depending on the matchup. I don't necessarily love when they play with it. Playing him with Sumner is not something that I particularly love. I think, you know, playing him with Olynyk would probably be a smarter combination just based on spacing, but I think, you know, that has to do with why he doesn't necessarily always get rebounds either, because Solinger is down there trying to get those rebounds himself.
Well, you know, and you bring up a good point. Solinger back in the starting lineup tonight. He played fairly decent off the bench recently. And, you know, I can't wait when Jared Weiss joins us a little bit later in the show for the Garden Report. I can't wait to hear a little bit more about Johnson and, you know, his thoughts on why he performed so well. And, you know, again, that's one of the questions I have lined up for him is, you know, was it something that the way he was being utilized tonight, were they doing something different strategy-wise? Was there something that Johnson was doing differently? The whole team came out with better energy. Even when they played sloppy, I think they held pretty tight with energy, which was nice. And we're going to be opening up those FanDuel toll-free call lines here in just a little bit. We'll be taking your calls probably in about 10 minutes on the FanDuel toll-free call lines. Toll-free number is 347-215-7771. The CLNS radio call lines are powered by FanDuel, and the NBA season is in full swing. Play against your friends anytime on FanDuel. Head-to-heads and private leagues have never been easier. Think you know basketball? Prove it at FanDuel.com. FanDuel is the best place to play one-day fantasy basketball. Pick a team of nine players with just players from tonight's games. Payouts will be in your account the next morning. No waiting to get paid. You can play every day or whenever you want, and leagues start at just $1. Finally, it can pay to be a fan. Plus, right now, I have a special offer for my listeners. Enter a FanDuel league right now, and if you don't win, FanDuel will refund your money. Any contest you want, up to $10. Just make a deposit, choose your league, and if you don't win, you'll get that money right back in your FanDuel account. The only way to get this exclusive no-lose offer is to go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone, and use the promo code Celtics. That's promo code Celtics, CELTICS. Anyone can play. Go to FanDuel.com and use that CLNS promo code Celtics. For free play, FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today. All right, Calvin. So we are going to open up these phone lines in about 10 minutes, but I wanted to ask you, too, like some other observations you had from Jay Crowder, because Jay Crowder, in the first half especially, had some excellent, excellent play. Ton of points in that first half. Really, really just went bananas. did a great job, and I want to see what you think about him, because he had to, not only was he generating offense, but he had to guard Paul George for most of the night and held George to 4 points in that first half.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about Jay Crowder is that he seems to basically have boundless energy. You know, he's like he's a sort of a slightly smaller version of the Manimal down in Denver. I feel like, I mean, obviously maybe a better one-on-one individual defender, but just a guy who's out there making energy plays, making hustle plays constantly. I'd like to actually see him shoot a little more. I liked that he was aggressive tonight. You know, he hit what he hit on his threes. He hit half of his threes. I think that he's one of the better three-point shooters on this team. They like to take a lot of three-point shots. I know you want to say 35% is not that much, but the team really doesn't have that many great shooters percentage-wise. I'd like to see him more aggressive on the perimeter, and I think that would open up his dribble drive game, which is sort of, it looks wild and out of control, but, you know, he knows how to make a shot, and I think that we saw it tonight. I think that, you know, obviously some of his points were scored off of turnovers, like the Celtics need to do, get points off of turnovers. He had, you know, a couple of fast break dunks. But ideally, like, that's what you want. You want him shooting threes, sort of forcing teams to close out on him and then trying to get to the basket.
Yeah, and he did shoot very well. First quarter, he was 4 for 5. I think he was 1 for 2 from three-point land, but he had 9 points. To finish out the half, 19 points on 8 for 9 shooting from field goal range. And the other thing is there was that one point, I think it was probably around maybe 4 minutes left in the second quarter. I can't remember exactly. But he scored 7 unanswered points all on his own. At a baseline drive and layup, a three-pointer, and then a baseline fadeaway. So 3 very different ways to score and create space on the floor. And the ESPN announcers just couldn't stop talking about how much his offensive game has really exploded. And we've seen him go off in December for a number of 20-plus point games. I think he's averaging about 14 on the season right now. But offensively, he's getting more and more involved, and I love it when he's more efficient. He wasn't as good in the second half, but, you know, they really needed to go to some other players. They couldn't rely. I mean, that first half was almost entirely Thomas and Crowder on the offensive end. And Thomas continued to play well. Way he created space to close out this game, and at other points in the game, you know, he's kind of quiet in the second and third quarter. Didn't shoot well in the third quarter, 2 for 8, but really finished very strong. Going to the hole, sometimes it's just crazy to watch him through the forest of trees and still find daylight and be able to get that in off the glass. I kept saying. And I'm maybe going to eat my words now, Calvin, but I kept saying that I feel like maybe Isaiah's still better to come off the bench. I wasn't so comfortable with him being a starter. But at this point, he's just had 2 games where he scored, not tonight, but leading up to tonight, he had 2 games in a row where he scored 30-plus points, first time in his career. It seems like he just keeps getting better, even when the team isn't getting better.
Well, I think that with Isaiah, part of the key to him having a great offensive game is not necessarily making him the workhorse with the ball in his hands on every possession. You know, I like to see some more off-ball screens. If you get Isaiah in motion without the ball, he's already moving toward the basket or in a direction where he wants to go, which is usually toward the basket. It really creates an advantage because, you know, his defender's already a step behind. I think in these games where you see Isaiah go 8 for 22 or, you know, something like that, or even worse, you know, if he's going 5 for 17, it's because the Celtics can't score. He's, you know, he's got a man on him from the three-point line, and he you know, has to drive all the way to the basket with a guy in his hip. And, you know, I think Isaiah, because he's a smaller guy and he has to work so hard to score, you saw that, you know, play that he did over Mahinmi, where he should have been an and one, but they didn't call it late in the fourth quarter, where basically put the game away, turned it from a three-point to a five-point game, you know, with a minute left. And he finishes so hard, but he gets banged all the time. I feel like he wears down in the second half of a lot of these games. If you look at his numbers, yeah, he scores, and, you know, he gets a sort of second wind in late in the fourth quarter after he sits. But I think that that's why some of his shooting numbers aren't necessarily great. But when you can get him the ball, again, with, you know, without him having to dribble as much as he does, I think that that's ideal, and I think they really did a good job of that tonight. Obviously, he was hot from three-point land as well, which helps.
Yeah, and there have been times. If there's one criticism for Thomas, it's how he can go into those quick three-pointers early in the possession. That'll drive me nuts. I mean, I know Brad Stevens loves the three-point shot. I know he, you know, he knows. I know he loves to encourage his players to shoot when they're open. This team has not been good from three, and those quick spot-up threes have not actually been kind to them either. I don't have a stat on it. I wish I did. But usually when they just pop and jack the ball at the very early, right when they bring it up, before they've even made an initial pass, those don't seem to fall very often. When Thomas does that, he frustrates me. When we see the extra passes and he works to get space, or he just plain gets open because they are working him off the ball, which they started last night against the Knicks and did very well successfully, and then he gets those three-pointers, it's almost like when they get into that offense, they're more likely to hit those. Even Kelly Olynyk, we've seen him pop some early in the shot clock that don't go down. But when he comes off a screen, he creates some space. Those are more likely to go. He hit a couple in the first half. I think he had one in the second half. And you know, Kelly hit them timely. His three-pointers were timely in this game. There's no doubt. So we'll definitely be talking to Jared Weiss a little bit later for the Garden Report. But we are going to open up these call lines now. So definitely get in. The FanDuel toll-free call lines are now open. The toll-free number is 347-215-7771. Do you love FanDuel as much as me? Hit me up on Twitter, CSL_Justin, and let me know. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use my code Celtics and sign up now. Special free offers for new users. Special offer for my listeners. Enter a FanDuel league now. And if you don't win, FanDuel will refund your money. Any contest you want, up to $10, just make a deposit, choose your league. And if you don't win, you'll get that money right back in your FanDuel account. The only way to get this exclusive no-lose offer is to go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone, and use the promo code Celtics. That's promo code Celtics. Anyone can play. Go to FanDuel.com and use the CLNS promo code Celtics. Don't forget to use my code Celtics at FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. All right, everybody, sign up today. The FanDuel toll-free call lines are now open. Call us up, 347-215-7771. You know, it's a little bit of a late game for us too, but we do have somebody on the line, so we're just going to go hit it right now. 781 area code. You're on the line. Who's calling?
I'm hoping you guys can hear me because I'm using a headset that I've never used to make a phone call before. But it's Matt Rury. How's it going, gentlemen?
Matt, how are you, my man? We can definitely hear you. You sound fine.
Great. Sounds good. Listen, I don't really know where I'm going with this call tonight. I just wanted to call and say hello and say that I was in attendance. And I thought that this game was lost with about 3 minutes to go, maybe a little earlier than that, because the Celtics just looked out of sorts, and it was an ugly game all around. But for whatever reason, I don't know. You guys tell me what you saw on TV. I just think Indiana became even more lazy than the Celtics were, and that's how they were able to make those steals. Or am I wrong? Was it just quick feet and hands by Amir Johnson, Marcus Smart? Jay Crowder got one in there as well towards the end of the game. 3-4, maybe even 5 steals in a row, guys. I mean, that's what won this game.
It was three. And Matt, I'll tell you what, I don't want to say it was lazy on the Pacers' part, but the Celtics gambled on every single one of those. Had the Pacers picked it up and made the quick pass, they would have found the open man very easily and put points on the board. But every single one of those plays, the Celtics gambled. They pressed that perimeter right away. And I think the Pacers were thinking, hey, every one of these games ends with the teams moving into their half-court offense and the defense hunkers down and they just try to prevent them from getting to the basket. The Celtics just you know, kind of flipped the script a little bit. I just can't believe that the Pacers fell for it three times in a row. What about you, Calvin?
The Mahini play, the first steal that went to Jay Crowder was through his hands. So, that'll just happen. I think if he just caught the ball, he would have been fine. Crowder hustled over to get the steal on that dunk. The Amir Johnson steal, I think you don't expect Amir Johnson to try to make a steal up at the three-point line. I think the length of his arms had a lot to do with that steal, and the fact that, you don't expect him, a guy, 6'8 or 6'9, however tall he is, to try to make that play in that situation. Smart, the smart steal is the only one that I would qualify as lazy, I think.
Yeah, the smart steal was kind of lazy. He jumped it.
Yeah.
That's funny because, I mean, Smart is the guy that you would think is going to be the aggressive player on plays like that and might be able to make the more athletic play. But from what I saw, I kind of agree with you guys. I hate to say it. I love controversy. You know that. But Smart was the one where it seemed like they sort of gifted it to him. And I didn't really see it that well as far as Amir Johnson was concerned, Calvin. But if the fact that his arms are long enough to get in the passing lane, then I'm believing it. So it was,
well, and after two straight steals, Matt, you know, it's almost, I think it took the Pacers out of their rhythm, right? We gave them an opportunity to gain their confidence and take the game. The Celtics definitely provided opportunity for the Pacers. And, you know, I was just as mystified as you were that they were able to retake this lead and finish strong. But it was aggressive play on the defensive end, on the perimeter, that did it. But I can see how that third one might have happened. It might have happened a little lazy because at that point, I think the Pacers were like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And the Celtics, how bad did they need this win? I mean, honestly, Matt, they needed this win big time because you want to talk about confidence. I mean, these guys have got to be struggling to keep their heads up like there's an 80-pound weight hanging on their chin, pulling it down. I mean, losers of 6 out of the last 7 in 4 straight. Yep. A lot of these bombs against lesser teams in the league. We heard all the right answers after the Lakers loss, right? We can't play down to our opponent, yada, yada, yada. And then they continue on, you know, this poor play. Now, the Pacers, so the Celtics come in tied for 9th with the Knicks after the loss to the Knicks. They're at 500 heading into this game. And, you know, they're definitely struggling. The Pacers, on the other hand, they've been 6-4 in their last 10. They're sitting in the top 4. I gotta say, I think that this could be a motivating win for this team. I mean, you know, I know Larry H. Russell is tired of watching them. He's already bored. He said on his last show that he can't even take this team. So, you know, a nice spirited win like this. I mean, is this the one? Is this the win that vaults them towards another, you know, winning streak like they finished the last season? Or, because I'll tell you what, I was thinking the way they played late, they're just telling Danny, go ahead and trade some of us. None of, you know, we can't do it. Trade some of us. Because he was he was getting permission to overhaul this roster.
Yeah, I wish I could say that they were going to go on a run like this or like they did last year. But the team is just too inconsistent. We've seen too many times where they played down to their opponents. And you're right. After the Laker loss, they were saying all the right things. But then you get to last night's game, and they had another big lead in that game, and they blew it. And after the game, Jay Crowder didn't have any sort of answer, and he was at a loss for words. So I'm not really sure that this team is going to be able to go on a run like that. But I do think that they have the pride and to put the effort out there and try and play well every night. So they just, Calvin and I have talked about this a lot. The middle of the Eastern Conference is very competitive and not in a great way. It's in a very above average way, but it is very competitive. So it's going to be tough for a team like the Celtics or Indiana for that matter to win games consistently over the course of 3-4 weeks. They're going to have some tough losses out there. That leads me to the question that I'm going to leave you guys with, because I'm not really sure how to answer it myself. Is it better for this team at this point to make a push and try and do another or have another situation where they are a 7 or a 6 or an 8 seed and maybe get bounced in the first round? Or do they try and trade some guys off and get some more assets and maybe miss the playoffs and still hover in that mediocre range but have a little bit better draft pick next year? I don't really know where to go with it, guys, because I want the team to win, and I want them to play hard, and I want to have fun going to games. But at the same time, a first-round playoff exit is not really any of those things. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I'm going to get off, but keep the good work up, and have a great show.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Registering your presence on the FanDuel toll-free call lines. Remember, listeners, Call in 347-215-7771. That's toll free, 347-215-7771. Calvin, I'm going to let you have first crack at Matt's question.
Okay, I don't necessarily believe that. Well, here's the thing. I don't believe that this team is quite as good as maybe we thought earlier in the season. I think that their, you know, plus-minus rating or sixth in the league still, and it was fourth at one point. I think that is a little bit of a misnomer because of the style that they play. You know, when they create a lot of turnovers, they're capable of blowing teams out, but when that doesn't happen, they're not exactly a team that I would want to trust in the playoffs. So I do think that they need to make a move at least, you know, for that reason. And I'm also wondering something I was going to ask you about. If, you know, maybe they're not as deep as we thought they were at the start of the season, or maybe, you know, the depth in this particular case is hurting them, but we can get to that question in a minute. But I also think that, you know, not trading away guys at this point and trying to miss the playoffs, okay, so you end up with, you know, the 12th pick in the draft as opposed to the 17th. If you just look at statistics, like the advantage gained in player value in that situation is negligible. Like if you're hoping to, you know, get into the lottery and you're essentially playing the Powerball number that you know, might go from 11 to 1 or 11 to 3, well, that's fine, but the odds at that point are extremely unlikely. And in my opinion, it's not worth, you know, missing the playoffs and not enjoying the thrill of having your team make it, at least having some pride in them, and just the pain of like watching your team lose every night, in order to get, you know, what is a marginably better pick in almost every circumstance. So I think that when people talk about tanking and, you know, why teams should tank, they overlook just the value of winning games. And, yeah, okay, if you believe in a championship or nothing, then in either case you're not going to win a championship. So why not enjoy as many wins as you possibly can and try to build yourself to be better in the long term?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to package a number of these players if they can and do an upgrade this season, next season, whenever it is. They have too many players to be developed. It's going to happen, and too many picks on the table. At some point, they're going to figure out a way to do that. The only way they avoid it is to move some of these guys for future first-round picks once they hit a certain level and they don't see the difference between, you know, power forward B and power forward A to be that great. But power forward A can yield a future first-round pick, and they don't like their chances of re-signing that individual. But for the most part, we're likely to see some of these players get consolidated at some point when the opportunity arises. But some of these players are going to stay on this roster. And so to your point, these guys should absolutely be trying to win every game. And there's definitely no reason to have them tank at least until after the trading deadline, because you never know what's going to happen at the trading deadline. It's really been very flat. I mean, Danny did a lot of trades last year, and the Isaiah Thomas move was obviously a spark, and we would love to see something like that happen again. But traditionally, the trade deadline winds up coming up with not a lot of changes. And so that's really what we should expect this year, is not a lot of changes at the trade deadline. But should something change, you want to have as many records on the books, because the change isn't going to be sending out players, you know, a great player for more picks. The change if Danny made a move would be to consolidate and get a better player, which means at that point you're definitely increasing your odds of making the playoffs. You said earlier that whole middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference is tightly contested. It doesn't take a lot of runs. When the Celtics went on their run before they just threw up the stink bomb starting the new year, they were only 2.5 games out of first place behind Cleveland. That wasn't that long ago. If they could tag on a win streak, make a move at the deadline, bring somebody in, sky's the limit. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm not even saying it's likely that that's going to happen. But what I am saying is you have to play for that opportunity. They already got the Brooklyn pick. They get the swap next year. They get the Brooklyn pick the year after that. Odds are good that they'll still be able to build through the draft. You got to play for wins. You got to play for wins now. And it's a culture thing. And how long do you think Brad Stevens is going to stick around? you know, with players that aren't winning. I mean, I think he's committed to this franchise, but even Doc told us after about 4 years of losing, it was really, really hard on him. And it was so hard that when Danny pulled the trigger to move Pierce and Garnett, it was, no, I'm not sticking around, guys. I'm sorry. And he went to the Clippers. And understandably so. And I don't think anybody in this organization faulted him for it. You can only take losing for so long. And Brad is a great strategist. So I do think that the depth hurts a little bit. My concern about what's happening right now, Calvin, I'm going to throw this back onto you. And just a quick reminder, up until we do the Garden Report, the FanDuel toll-free call lines are still open, 347-215-7771. Here's what I think, Calvin. I think that really what happened is, and we've seen this happen in seasons before, that the Celtics, look at all the games that were close games. Every single game, if you look at their ranking for scoring margin, they're still in the top eight for scoring margin. So it means that most of their games are contested, and they've had some blowouts that were earlier in the season. Lately, they haven't been able to win those close games. What I'm thinking is most of the other teams in the league may not have gotten out to the start the Celtics did. Sure, they stumbled the first 2 weeks, but then they started to get on a roll. I think they got their chemistry quicker than the other teams in the league, and now as the other teams are finding chemistry, as they're working out the kinks, as they're improving, they're passing the Celtics by because the Celtics hit their stride a little bit earlier than the other teams. And now some of those closely contested games that they were winning are going the other way, and the blowouts really aren't even an option at this point. I don't think the Celtics got worse. I think they just stayed the same.
It's an interesting theory. But I think if you look at, you know, who played early in the season, who got minutes and the rotations, I feel like Stevens was tinkering around with those rotations just as much as a lot of the other teams in the league. It's just what I think is more likely is that a lot of the guys on the Celtics are streaky players, guys who we've seen make stretches. You know, guys like Jared Sullinger, who when Jared Sullinger is playing at his best, you know, do a show and Celtics fans will tell me, you know, what's this guy's ceiling? How good do you think he could be? And because he looks like a guy who, you know, you want to pay an $80 million contract to. Right now he doesn't look like that guy, and I think it's because he's not a consistent player. Kelly Olynyk, you know, when he's on a game, is a guy who definitely looks like he can stretch the floor, he can do it all, but there's other times he does nothing out there on the court. I think just early on in the season, you know, all the guys were playing well at the same time, particularly the backcourt of, you know, the triumvirate of Bradley and Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas. And then when you combine that with Jay Crowder, the defense they were playing early on in the season was just phenomenal. And I don't know that they've been able to hold on to that intensity as the grind of the season has worn it down. You know, Avery Bradley is a sort of notoriously fragile player in terms of health, and I'm starting to wonder the same thing about Marcus Smart now at this point, right? I know it's the second season, but we already have to start asking that question, and a lot of it is I'm not sure that they can play that style consistently throughout the course of an entire season.
Yeah, you know what? He does still continue to tinker with the lineups, and we've been hearing from the players about that, and they say it's on them, but it's sort of leaking out from the players, and I think you're right. The rotations are still up in the air, and the reason they are is because no one player does anything well enough to distinguish themselves amongst their peers. And when I hear some of those comments about, you know, the players saying, oh, we just don't have an established rotation, to me that's excuses. I mean, I'm a business owner. I don't like excuses. I have a real hard time with excuses. When I hear the players, I understand their frustration, and I understand why they would want a set rotation. But these guys have to go out and earn it. I mean, if you want a set rotation, you have to earn your spot. And there are a couple of players on this team that have earned that spot. One is Jay Crowder. One is Isaiah Thomas. One is Avery Bradley. Outside of that, Johnson seems to be getting the opportunity to start night in and night out. Whether he's earned it or not, I think is somewhat debatable. But there's nobody else on the team who can do all the little things that he does, so he holds that spot. Everybody else after those four is a total crapshoot, and they have only themselves to blame for a lack of playing consistency that they don't stay in a consistent rotation. If any one of them distinguished themselves as owning their spot, Stevens would give it to them. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree at all. I think you hit the nail on the head. The reason Jay Crowder is he's basically played, you know, a similar amount of minutes all season. He's held on to that small forward position through thick and thin, you know, as long as he's available. The reason is because he's the only guy on the team. He and Bradley, you know, to a lesser extent, to be fair to Bradley, to the same extent, because he's had a better year offensively than a lot of people give him credit for. But those are the two guys who are consistent on both ends. Play consistent defense, play consistent offense. Everybody else, I feel like Brad Stevens is sort of making a decision, you know, what do I want to give up here to put this guy in? What am I okay with not having out on the floor? So he'll play Amir Johnson sometimes. Johnson, you know, maybe the most consistent of the big men in terms of having offensive and defensive abilities. But, you know, guys like Sullinger and Olenek are not necessarily consistent in everything they do. You have to give something up to have those guys on the floor. Marcus Smart has had a disastrous year offensively. Let's just be honest. I mean, he's a point guard who doesn't dribble the ball. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say he's on my list. That's another topic. You know what? Let's save that one, and we'll go into that, because I think we do have to talk about that, and it was definitely on display tonight. I just heard from Jared. He's going to be joining us for the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report in about 15 minutes. So the FanDuel toll-free lines are still open. Definitely taking – we've got time for one, maybe two calls. It's toll-free, 347-215-7771. And I also just want to make sure I give a nice plug to the CLNS Radio YouTube channel, because that's where you can find the Garden Report, right? CLNS Radio is the best of written, spoken, and watched Boston sports coverage. For the best of AV, turn to CLNS Radio's YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/CLNS Radio. You're going to get high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews, and the Garden Report HD post-game show shot on the parquet floor at the TD Garden. So make sure you subscribe to the CLNS Radio YouTube channel. Definitely looking forward to hearing from Jared. I think he's going to have some nice nuggets about the players finally putting a win, you know, on the board. But let's talk about Marcus Smart, because there were many times tonight. You talked about how he's just offensively not there. I think he works so hard on defense, and he doesn't know how to pace himself yet on offense and defense, for that matter, to reserve his energy to be effective at both ends of the floor. And where we see that sometimes is his three-pointers. It's not like he's wildly off on the three-pointer, but he's not always doing it at the right time. It's like his brain comes out of it. Shot selection with the three-pointer isn't always great. And how many times did he drive baseline and just not be able to finish tonight? Every once in a while, he's got a nice pass and a nice look. But everybody in the league knows that as soon as Marcus Smart starts to attack the basket, you just collapse, because he's got no bailout pass and no alternate move, no hook shot, no floater, none of that to wind up creating some space. Nobody thinks he's going to do it early. They all know he's going right to the rim, right, you know, just attacking the basket, almost with his head down as he's on his way. I think I remember three, maybe four drives like that tonight, and two or three players collapsed on him, and he still put up a wild shot that had absolutely no chance of falling.
You know, he seems to have a little bit of what I accused Jeff Green of in the past, which is when he gets the ball at the three-point line, he seems to make the decision of exactly what he's going to do before he even reacts to the defender. He's either going to take a set three-point shot, you know, with a guy in his face. Sometimes the ball will get rotated to him and he'll take an open three, which is fine. But I feel like most of his threes are just, you know, I've decided to take a three on this possession, and I'm going to take that three regardless of where my man is, or I'm going to drive all the way to the rim. Doesn't matter who's there or, you know, what's going on in terms of, you know, where the big man is. I think he's got to develop some sort of mid-range, some sort of interior passing. His court vision seems to be lacking on the interior in terms of if he can just get rid of the ball when he sees a shot blocker coming towards him, find somebody and create offense for other people. But he doesn't seem to be very good at that. Like you said, he puts his head down and he's determined to get to the rim no matter what. Sometimes that determination pays off for him. You saw him, you know, get a couple of offensive rebounds on that one play tonight where, you know, he worked hard, sort of, you know, got blocked and then went you know, right back up with it immediately. I respect his grit in that situation. I just wish his court vision was a little better.
Yeah, his court vision definitely needs to improve. It's nice to see him staying healthy and, you know, definitely, you know, that he got the nickname the Cobra, although I will tell you, I'm pretty sure Kevin Garnett got the original Cobra nickname for the Celtics. I don't know if you remember back in that game when he got really low and, you know, did the whole full court press. That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And so Kevin Garnett was the original Cobra, but we do have some – the one thing I will say is when they make a good play, there is a lot of energy and passion coming from Marcus Smart. I'm not down on him in the future or for the future or his leadership ability. I think he needs to figure out some of it. Like, he needs to start focusing a little bit on offense. When they need, you know, hold them down, stops are a must right now on defense. That's when he has to, but he's got to practice his offense a little bit. He's got to get a little bit better. I want to go back to Johnson just a little bit as we're setting up for Jared to come onto the show. But if you remember at the fourth quarter, I think we were about almost halfway through, Jordan Hill started owning the boards. He started getting his offense going. He made a pass to a cutting George Hill that gave Indiana the lead for the first time since the first quarter. I think it was 84-82 with about 6:51 remaining. And at that point, maybe within the next 20 or 30 seconds, Brad Stevens subbed Johnson back into the game. They went right to him in the post for a jump hook. We don't see that very often. We don't see them go to Johnson for offense like that. And the game changed. Jordan Hill and Mahinmi did not own the Celtics from that point on. He was really a difference maker. And the Celtics still went small as well, I think, for the last, 4 minutes? So it wasn't long after that Crowder was playing the four, and they went small, and they still didn't get owned from that point on the boards. I mean, is Johnson really that much of a difference maker night in and night out? Because when we were talking about this team and talking about setting rotations, remember, I put Johnson on the peripheral. I know Stevens has got him squarely entrenched in that starting center role, but I have him on – I don't know that he's fully – I know he's got it from Stevens, but do I think he earns it on a night-in and night-out basis? I'm not so sure. But is he that much of a difference maker? We heard from the people in Toronto that he does all the little things and it doesn't always show up in the stats. Do you believe in him that much?
Well, I want to touch on Jordan Hill briefly because I'm actually a big fan of his. I'm a Laker fan, and when he was on the team, I was impressed with him. He's played well in Indiana. I think that having a guy like that on your bench, you saw what he did to Kelly Olynyk, and Kelly Olynyk just didn't have the physicality to guard a guy like that. And to me, that's the point of having Amir Johnson on the floor. Do I like everything that he does? No, I think he disappears at times. He's not as good of a rebounder. It's ironic that we're talking about that tonight, but he's not as good of a rebounder as I'd like for a guy at his size and in his position. I think when Isaiah Thomas is not on the court, he sort of gets lost out there sometimes because, he's the best screener on the team, and I think that they don't utilize him necessarily as much as I'd like without Isaiah on the floor. So I almost feel like he's unnecessary. But the bottom line is he's the only one who can really do what he does, which is play interior defense. You saw Olynyk just doesn't have the strength or the physicality to do it, and Jared Sullinger just doesn't have the size to do it. So, based on roles and necessity, he's the best that you're going to get in that position. Now, do I think that they would be better off, still making a trade for a guy who can block some shots inside? Yeah, I do. I personally, going back to what you said earlier, think that the Celtics should make, considering what their assets are, considering the fact that do you really want another 3 first-round picks on this team next year? Sure, you want the Brooklyn pick, but do you need Dallas's and your own first-round pick next year on this team? I don't necessarily even think so. Late lottery or not late lottery, even the 12th pick, it doesn't necessarily make sense for this team. Why not package those two guys, try to get, a Tyson Chandler? I feel like you can get Tyson Chandler for probably, the Dallas pick right now, I'd imagine. Right? In David Lee's contract, maybe. Obviously, you use that contract to make salaries match, but there's a guy, if you really want to make a bold move, try to trade for Dwight Howard. like, why not improve your interior defense? I know I took it in a different direction, but I tend to do that sometimes. I apologize.
Yeah, but Dwight Howard makes me crazy. And, you know, I let me ask you, who do you think on that Houston club forced out McHale? Do you think it was Howard?
No, I don't think Howard has that kind of juice, honestly. I think it has to be Harden.
You think it absolutely has to be Harden?
It has to be Harden, yeah. There's no
but you don't think maybe
Harden.
There was a little whispering in Harden's ear from somebody like Dwight Howard? You know, I mean, because that's usually – listen, Harden's already a great player, right? And he goes out there and
right.
he gets his and he does his thing. I doubt McHale is, like, telling Harden that he's playing the game the wrong way night in and night out. A star or a former star with fading skills – is the one who starts to think that they're not being used properly. And then maybe that person has a close relationship with the player who is the true leader of the team and ultimately, you know, upsets the cart with the coach.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I believe that Dwight, I need to double check this, but I believe that Dwight had a lot of injury problems early in the season. Did he not? And he didn't play that many minutes anyway. I think that you know he's been around more since McHale's been fired, and they're sort of going to that Twin Tower situation. But you're right, he is a player who needs to be coddled. But the other thing about Dwight is he's not somebody who would ever call out the coach directly because he's very passive-aggressive. So I have a hard time thinking of believing that he would ever go to somebody and say, you need to fire McHale, because it's not really in his personality. It's more likely
personality
yeah.
to get somebody else to do the dirty work, right?
Yeah, or to, you know, maybe complain and maybe say, you know, I need the ball more, and like, or you know, say not even say I need the ball more, because that's too aggressive too. It'd really be more like, yeah, I'm not sure this offense we're running is successful with, you know, all these guards out on the floor and not enough big. It'd be, you know what I mean? Something like that, alluding to what they need to change, but. In my opinion, I think McHale's biggest failure had nothing to do with how much he played Howard, but I think it was trying to force Lawson into that starting lineup that probably really cost him his job.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I still think Howard's a coach killer. You know, he's bounced around enough. I'm concerned about him, and I think if you're going to roll the dice on somebody who might be disgruntled, you got to go with the younger Boogie Cousins. Because I don't think he's a coach killer. Sacramento is an everything killer, right? Until this guy gets an opportunity to play in an organization that's well run, you know, and I'm not saying George Karl isn't a good coach, because he is, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe a younger coach would connect with Boogie better. We had Mark Spears on our show when we filled in for Larry Russell 2 weeks ago, and we talked to him about Boogie, and he said, listen, you know, DeMarcus Cousins is great off the court. He is a great guy. He's highly competitive. And I know Mike Gorman doesn't want anything to do with Boogie, and I agree. Major risk, major gamble. But if you're going to roll the dice, I'm going to say no to Howard and yes to Cousins if you're going in that direction. And I know Cousins isn't available. I get that part too.
Right. That's like saying, yeah, you know, I'd say no to Dwight Howard and yes to Anthony Davis. You know, that's a great thing to say conversationally.
Oh, but it's not. It's
Davis,
not.
But,
it's, no, I hear what you're saying, but it's not, because there's a lot of people in Boston who don't want Boogie Cousins here. Like, they would not trade – they wouldn't trade, you know, the Nets pick straight up for Boogie Cousins, which I would do in a heartbeat. And there are people no, I would never do that.
Those people are insane. Yeah, just – again, it's apples and oranges here, because the assets you could throw out to acquire Dwight Howard aren't the same as what you would need to get Boogie Cousins. Like you said, that Nets pick would definitely have to be included in a trade to Sacramento, whereas I think you could get Howard right now for your in the Dallas pick, two picks that functionally you don't need anyway. So if I was a Celtics fan, I would rather do that get Dwight Howard and retain your chance to get Ben Simmons or, you know, Ingram or whoever you end up with next year, another young building block who's potentially a top five pick, and you get Howard versus getting Boogie Cousins, who, you know, who's to say he's even going to stay when he becomes a free agent in 2 years anyway.
Yeah, I say no to Howard because he's high risk, low reward. And the reason they're the same is because I think that they both have the ability to disrupt the chemistry on the team. And I can see that the chemistry is wavering as it is, but I could see like somebody like Howard could potentially blow the doors off the chemistry. There's something about him that makes me concerned about chemistry, and I don't think he necessarily goes with the flow. And I take high risk, low reward. And so that's why I say they are, you're right, they're not apples to apples in terms of players. One's at the beginning of their career is an absolute stud. The other one's at the end of their career and is, you know, fading skills. But my point is, it doesn't matter what assets you're giving up, right? To me, both are high risk, and Dwight Howard's low reward. Cousins would be high reward. A lot of people don't want either of them. I don't blame those people. I think you're nuts if you wouldn't take Boogie Cousins. I mean, even giving up the first round, the Nets pick this year, I would still do it. You never know what's going to happen in this league. You know, Ben Simmons could come in and, you know, could be a struggle.
Yeah, let me throw one more at you, because I've been discussing this with, you know, a couple of the post-game show hosts lately. What about the chance to bring in Carmelo? Now, I know Celtics fans notoriously hate Carmelo Anthony, but again, I feel like if you look at what he's done this year, he's become a more unselfish player as he's gotten older. He's essentially fits right into your system as, you know, the undersized power forward. You can stretch the floor a little bit more. We talked about, you know, the fact that a lot of your fours are incomplete, and he creates another, you know, go-to scorer down the stretch of games. You could get Carmelo Anthony probably for those two first-round picks. Maybe you'd have to give up one, you know, Nets future pick. But, like, why wouldn't you make that deal?
Wait, you would. What picks are you giving up for Carmelo? Just tell me again.
Oh, okay, I would give up Boston's own pick in this upcoming draft, Dallas's pick, and then maybe a future Nets pick. Not this Nets pick, but, you know, maybe the one in 2018.
Definitely.
Maybe you don't even need that. Maybe just two picks, that, you know, David Lee's contract, and then, you know, another contract filler or two. I don't obviously.
And maybe a player, because it's got to be a consolidating move, not just a move to move draft picks. It's got to be a consolidating. We've got Jared on hold.
Well,
we're going to bring him in a second.
Okay.
But that's an I would welcome Carmelo just because I noticed that he's playing better this season. But you got to remember, he's a short-term rental. So I don't think you can give up the future Nets pick. But because we have so many picks, could you give up the Dallas pick and the Celtics pick this year and grab somebody like Carmelo and get him for a couple of years? Absolutely. I think you could do that. It would definitely vault you into the East a little bit. I think he would play well with Isaiah Thomas. I think that could work out fairly well. I think we could space the floor for both of those guys with the way that the bigs are on this roster now. You could even go, you know, with Carmelo's size, you could almost go with Olynyk and Sullinger in the starting lineup and then bring in, you know, Johnson afterwards, you know, whoever you needed to kind of space that floor out a little bit. All right. So we got to go to the Grandstand Celtics locker room report. We've got Jared Weiss on the line. Grandstand sports highlights from fans in the stands on the new sports app Grandstand. You can share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download Grandstand on the App Store or at grandstand.me. And now we are going to bring in Jared Weiss from the Garden, CLNS's Garden Report at the Garden from amazing, a home victory, Jared. Imagine.
Didn't seem to be part of the plan for this team. I didn't think that they won home games anymore.
Yeah, they definitely they went against the script, I think.
And
well, we
had at the end there, because they haven't been executing on either end in the last 4 minutes of the game, pretty much the last 2 weeks there. I asked Marcus Smart about it, and he said that was really crucial for them to finish that strong. That's something that they've been trying to do lately, and it was a huge momentum changer for them.
Yeah, well, there really were two opposing forces in this game, right? You had the second night of back-to-backs, which up until the last time, they had been very, very strong for months and months, even back to last season. And then you had the fact that they don't seem to be able to want to win a game for the home crowd. They were clashing statistics tonight, and I'm glad that they wound up on the good end of it with a nice result. You asked Smart about that. The three back-to-back steals, obviously a highlight. Lots of pressure on the perimeter, a little bit of debate. Matt Rury called in earlier. Calvin and I have been talking about it as well, looking at this team, pressing that perimeter defense. Questions are, was Indiana lazy in that moment, or were they expecting the Celtics to hunker down in that half-court defense, let the Pacers run their half-court offense, try to stop them from penetrating? And instead, because what I saw was the Celtics just jumped on the perimeter and gambled big time, and it could have hurt them, but the plays went the right way, and the fact that the Pacers fell into the trap three times in a row took the Pacers out of it completely, and at that point it was just the home stretch.
Well, that's kind of the way that the Celtics defend when they're actually on top of their game. So I didn't think it was – I mean, yeah, obviously it's a gamble, but it wasn't some sort of surprise or something we haven't really seen before from them. This is how they were defending in the first half of the first month of the season when they were one of the best teams in the NBA, because guys like Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder were picking off passes nonstop. So that was – I think that's the kind of Celtics that people forgot even existed, and we got to see a glimpse of it tonight. And, you know, they did make some – I'd say maybe that last steal by Jay Crowder was a little risky, but he pulled it off. With these guys, I don't really think they really worry about whether or not the pickoff is risky. They're confident enough in their help defense and their recovery ability. And, of course, it's Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart that are going for most of these steals. And, like, both of those guys are really athletic, great, like, incredible recovery guys on if they get out of position defensively. So it's a pretty worthy gamble, and obviously it worked incredibly easily tonight.
Well, and Amir Johnson also snagged a steal, went full court, and got to throw one down, which was pretty interesting. It was definitely his night. 18 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds just in the first quarter after going down 8-0. The team, Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas, led the offense. But obviously Johnson, with grabbing those offensive rebounds and getting some second chance opportunities, was a big part of the Celtics being able to kind of get back into this game after coming out flat. What do you think was the difference for Johnson tonight? And maybe you got a chance to even ask him. Did the Celtics make an adjustment? Did Johnson's plantar fasciitis just take a night off and he was able to play at a different level? What led to the contributions and the rebounds, you think?
Well, so he said, as far as his foot, he says that it definitely gets sore at times, but it's starting to go away and definitely getting better. As far as his own performance, he actually said, this kind of goes to what you were saying before, is that they got down a couple times on the road and they wanted to get this one tonight, and that they owed it to the fans and not just themselves, because the fans come out every single night.
Yeah, well, and they do, and they owe it to the fans to be able to get these wins. You know, the other thing is they finished that fourth quarter going small. Now, Stevens told David Lee, you're not going to get minutes. You know, we've got to go small more. The Celtics finished the game that way, going small. Did you like what you see? I felt like Johnson was still able to lock it down, even though they went small. And can we count on that kind of aggressiveness to the basket when they go small? Because they finished the game the right way, pressed hard on defense, and they didn't take those, you know, early in the shot clock three-pointers that have just been murdering them in the fourth quarter as of late.
Yeah, I mean, there were some even in the fourth quarter, but they kind of got out of that at the end, especially because they were pretty much just fast breaking for the end of the game. I think that the small lineup with Crowder at the four is their most potentially explosive lineup. They're pretty vulnerable when the Crowder's at the four if they're going up against teams with two, you know, with a really good low post power forward, and that hurt them in a couple different games they played, like against Atlanta with Paul Millsap, against Chicago, against Memphis. So, you know, they kind of got killed the fourth quarter because of that. But tonight they're going up against a team that has Paul George playing mostly at the four. So, and they have CJ Miles at the three. So tonight was a really good matchup, and they would have lost this game if it weren't for that ridiculous run of turnovers in transition. At the end there, they would have lost the game and would be having a different conversation. So it wasn't like there was some sort of breakthrough tonight. I mean, Crowder had a really good game. Isaiah Thomas had another overall nice performance, and he's pretty much cementing his all-star status, I think, right now. And Amir Johnson had a great, one of his best games of his career, probably. But the rest of the team didn't really play that well. I mean, Turner struggled. Olynyk struggled. Olynyk was decent, but Solinger struggled. They still haven't – the team hasn't really completely figured it out yet. It's a good win, but if it weren't for an absurd 10-0 run to end the game, they would have been down in this one.
Yeah, it's got to lead to more wins. The first quarter woes were an issue at the beginning of the season. They corrected them. Then they became third quarter woes. Looked like they were going to go hold even though Paul George was going off for 17 points in the third quarter, which was amazing. But then at the very end, to close out the third quarter, they faded hard. And you were like, oh, there it is. Just when you thought it might be gone, there it is again. So, yeah, it's consistency, right? It's been the issue with this team the whole season. Can they be consistent? The rotations would be set if players were playing more consistently. And when that happens, things will sort itself out. There's, like you said, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, they kind of carried the team. Johnson had a big night. And that's what even when we don't get consistent efforts, it's really, Jared Sullinger has a couple of big nights, and that's pretty much it. So I know we're going to wrap here in just a couple of minutes because we're running out of time. The show's just about over. What other notes, Jared, do you have, just from the game and maybe some of, talking in the locker room?
Well, I guess the one thing that stands out is that Isaiah Thomas block on Paul George in crunch time, which was pretty shocking. Jay Crowder told him that he has to come over and help whenever George is attacking. And Isaiah also talked about his comfort of playing off the ball and about whether he feels more comfortable as a catch-and-shoot kind of guy. And he said that it's actually easier for him to be a catch-and-shoot guy, one, because he's showing the defense something different that they haven't been seeing that much, mixing it up throughout the game so that they can't really predict what's going to happen, and the fact that he doesn't have quite as much burden to break through the perimeter defense when he's playing off ball. And we saw that was really effective in the second half. He had a lot of, he would be on the weak side elbow. He'd get the ball, and he would make a quick little move and then drive to the hoop. He had a really big finish where he drew the foul that really helped him kind of get back in the game. So it's good to see Thomas getting to play off ball because, there's a lot of great on-ball players, but having them get off ball once in a while gives a different look to the defense, kind of puts the defense back on their heels a little bit, and that's when a guy like Thomas, who's really explosive, can really take advantage.
When you don't have dominant players and you have depth, you've got to throw a lot of different looks at a team. Hey, Jared Weiss from the Garden Report with the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report. Jared, thanks a lot, man, for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
All right, have a good night. Hopefully, this is a string of wins for the Celtics, Calvin. I know we're getting ready to close. We're actually just running out of time here. But this episode of the Celtics and Pacers postgame show was brought to you by Harry's Razors. Wake up to Harry's. What is your typical morning routine like? Now that we're into the new year, how is your routine changing, right? Everybody's got these New Year's resolutions, but how about talking about starting your day with Harry's, waking up to a better shave and waking up to the realization that you're paying an arm and a leg for razor blades. For listeners to my show, Harry's is giving $5 off your first purchase of a starter set with coupon code Celtics. After entering my code Celtics at checkout, you can get Harry's starter set for just $10. That's a month's worth of shaving for just $10 with the code Celtics at the checkout. All right, Calvin, I think we're going to be wrapping this show, but I wanted to kind of get your final thoughts on the game, maybe some of the points. I know we had to jump off on your the last question that you kind of teased. We could revisit that for a couple of minutes before we close. But, at the end of the day, this team hasn't been consistent. Hopefully this is, the first win of a little bit of a string, maybe not even a winning streak, but just maybe we could get 7-3 out of their next 10. Something like that. You never know what you're going to get from this team. If they could start to become consistent with a couple of wins, that'd be great. Maybe this is the first step, or maybe it's a blip on the radar.
Yeah, I think at this point it's impossible to say, right? I mean, we've expected runs from this team over the last couple of years, up and down, you know, lose, win four, lose four. They've been on a really bad run. I don't think that they're as bad as they've been up until this point. So I think that they'll, you know, hopefully make some hay out of this and see, you know, with guys not only being healthy, because, you know, they've been healthy the last couple of games, but sort of being healthy and sort of getting back into the groove of playing together again. You know, that's an underrated aspect of it. Maybe that'll propel them to some victories here. Hopefully, I wouldn't, you know, expect them to all of a sudden be a dominant team, but certainly better than they've been.
Yeah. Well, all right, the Celtics get the win, 103-94. Calvin, thanks for joining me. Amir Johnson having a really probably a career night, definitely a career night in terms of his time with the Celtics, who improved to 20-19. Amir Johnson, 14 points, 18 rebounds. Jay Crowder, 25 points and 11 for 15 shooting. Isaiah Thomas, just being Isaiah Thomas, 28 points on 9 for 18 shooting. 4 for 6 from three-point land. So hopefully this is the start of a couple of a win streak for the Celtics. We'll see. There'll be another game coming right up. I actually don't have the schedule in front of me, but I know they're right. I know it's right around the corner, and there'll be another CLNS post-game show. So everybody, thanks for listening. Calvin, again, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Yeah, it was nice to listen to the show with you. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again soon.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's good stuff. It's nice to be back on the air. And as a teaser to anybody listening, there is going to be more resurgence of Celtic Stuff Live. I know some people enjoyed listening to us come back on the air, John Duke and myself, in Larry's absence over the new year. And there is going to be plans for Celtic Stuff Live to come back and do some shows this season. So be on the lookout for that, everybody. Thanks for listening to the game. Again, Celtics winners 103-94, and we'll talk to you next time.